To Afghanistan now, where around 7 million people have defied Taliban threats and come out to vote in the most significant presidential election in the country's history. More than 50% of registered Afghans voted, despite Taliban threats against polling staff, security forces and the voters themselves. But despite Saturday's success, it may be weeks still before Hamid Karzai's successor is declared. In the meantime, that leaves Afghanistan in a potentially dangerous security vacuum. Thomas Ruttige is the co-director and senior analyst with the Afghanistan Analyst Network. He joins us from Berlin this morning. Thomas Ruttige, welcome to RN Breakfast.
Good morning, Fran.
This was an unprecedented and historic election in Afghanistan, and voters turned up in droves despite the threats of violence. What do you put that big voter turnout down to?
Well, I think there are at least two factors. One is that, of course, we are the first democratic handover of the position at the top of the state in Afghanistan, which ever happened through an election. And voters were enthusiastic to participate in that. And also, I think it has to do partly with the possibility that a new president also might change some things in Afghanistan. The international intervention and the cooperation with the Afghan government had run into significant problems over the past 12 years. The war was not stopped, as Afghans initially hoped, and has escalated. The Taliban are still there. Talks with them need to be done, and way need to be found for a future of Afghanistan, which is still a very poor country. It's 34% of all Afghans live in poverty, and there are immense socio-economic problems which the new president will be facing.
We'll come to the future of the country in a moment, but if we can stick with the election process and outcomes itself, numbers of voters were very high, particularly in Kabul and the other major cities. Do we have any knowledge of what happened outside the major urban areas in rural Afghanistan?
We only have very few reports coming in from the rural areas. That usually takes a while in Afghanistan until we have a full picture of what happens during elections. The turnout in the big cities, not only Kabul, but also Kandahar in the south, Mazar in the north, was quite surprisingly high. And also many women voted over there, which has to do with the enthusiasm we have described before. But we also had first reports from outlying districts where the Taliban were able to stop people from voting to a large extent. So the full picture will only emerge over the over the coming few weeks.
Yes, I've just seen a couple of reports from some of those outlying areas. There was violence at stations in Kunduz, Eastern Logar and Kunar, where 20 people were killed. And in the Oruzgan province, which was the area where Australian troops had been up until December, had been in place there around Tarinkap for 8 years, the suggestion that most people were discouraged from voting, and that was by the threats from the Taliban, but also from the local mullahs who told people not to vote. This is disturbing, isn't it? This kind of message coming not just from the Taliban, but from within the mosques themselves?
Yes, indeed. It's not really new, but we very often have looked at the conflict in Afghanistan only through the angle of Taliban violence. Karzai also has been or is still in a coalition with a lot of fundamentalist people, former Mujahideen leaders, Islamists who had fought the Soviets in the 1980s and were allies of the West. But coming back to Uruzgan, which might be interesting for Australian listeners, we have quite a diverse picture over there. We have in the north some areas of the Hazara, the Shia minority, where the turnout, as usual amongst the Hazaras, was quite high. Also in some districts around the provincial capital of Tirinkot, while in some more outlying areas where the Taliban are rather strong, you are right, there was not much voting going on.
Let's go to the actual candidates themselves. There were 8 candidates running. There are 3 front runners, I think I'm right in saying, former Foreign Minister Zalmay Rasool and Abdullah Abdullah, and Ashraf Ghani, a former World Bank academic. Are those the 3 front runners? And is there any sign, or do you have any sense of who has the edge or who had the edge on polling day?
You're right, these are the 3 frontrunners. That also has been the result of some polls in Afghanistan, although polls are not very reliable. There's not a long history of polling. But we get the impression that none of them will make the 50% hurdle in the first round, so we will probably have to wait for a second round, which is scheduled for the end of May. But that's a theoretical schedule. Counting and the adjudication of complaints is a very lengthy and sometimes painful process in Afghanistan, as we learned during the last presidential election in 2009, so that even can take longer, and we still will need a lot of patience before we know what the name of the new president is.
So that's at least 6 weeks, but from what you're saying, could be 10 or 12 weeks. What are the implications of that for Afghanistan on the political front, the economic front, and the security front?
Yeah, well, you were talking about the security vacuum in the beginning. That's not so much what I'm concerned about. I mean, it doesn't mean that there's no violence in the country. The Taliban have not come out as strong as they announced they would be during election day, but election is not over. Counting is also part of it, so a lot of things can still be happen. The problem is if the period of finding the new president takes longer than actually the constitutional period where Hamid Karzai is in office will be over before we have a new president. To put it a little bit simplistic, the Afghans were never very strong in adhering to their own constitution, so I think there will be a deal so that we will not face a political crisis.
So you think leading candidates between them could come to a deal to avert a second round of voting, basically nominate one of them?
Yeah, well, that would not be very democratic, but we cannot also exclude that. What's also likely is that the three leading candidates, possibly and Karzai, need to find a deal to about how this transition period will be organized before a handover happens. I personally believe that it would be better, even if it's complicated, to have a second round, because Afghans, as we saw in the turnout, are very interested in democratic institutions and processes, and if those processes are violated by a deal which doesn't come through elections, that's also not good for the country's future.
And just finally and briefly, what does all of this mean for the bilateral security agreement which the US has been trying to sign with Hamid Karzai to ensure the presence of American troops on the ground beyond this year? Hamid Karzai was not prepared to sign it. I think these other candidates are, by and large.
Yes, they all have said that during the electoral campaign, but you know how that is in countries, even our own ones. Sometimes one thing is said during the electoral campaign and another thing is done afterwards. So that's still an open question for me. But what, of course, these presidential candidates, as well as a majority of Afghans, understand is that the country will not be able to survive economically without Western aid. And the U.S. Congress has made clear if the BSA is not signed, then it might be difficult to give the money to Afghanistan, and particularly security forces are dependent on it. It's $4 billion per year, and without that, that Afghanistan cannot come up with alone.
Thomas Ruchidge, thank you very much for filling us in. Thank you.
Most welcome.
Thomas Ruchidge is the co-director and senior analyst with the Afghanistan Analyst Network.